Manchester City are the champions.
The Australians are. They retain the ashes.
Australia's Ash Barty is Wimbledon champion.
Very elegant. 10 group ones. And now the greatest of them all, the Melbourne Cup.
The 57 long years, the Demons are premiers.
Welcome to the Breakfast Club.
Yes, and welcome to the Breakfast Club on this Friday, June 24. Adam White, Scott Gullen, and Adam Ramanaskis are with you right throughout the course of the morning, at least until 8:30 before Michael Felgate takes over as he looks ahead to a big weekend of racing. Gareth Hall from 10:30. But until then, we've got plenty to talk about. We've got racing because Mark Hunter is coming into the studio for the Friday form this morning, along with Nick Quinn. So we'll look ahead to Caulfield tomorrow. There's a bit of racing going on in Queensland as well of note, so we might touch on that as well. But there will be a focus on the footy. Two games tonight in the AFL, a doubleheader, firstly at Docklands, where it's the Bulldogs and Hawthorn, and then later on West Coast and Essendon. And of course, last night, what a performance from the Demons. Or was it just a really poor performance from Brisbane? We'll find out shortly. Brent Harvey will help us do that from 7:30 this morning. But let's welcome in the team, and we'll start with Scotty Gullen. Scotty, good morning.
Adam, how are you? I think we're going to rename the show, the Nostradamus Club. I mean, we're seeing the future 12 hours before it happens. And in Steve-O time, our intrepid producer, he's seen it days ahead. So you declared, I think we should have cut up the audio.
The audio.
Your last words to our audience yesterday.
Yep.
Brisbane in trouble, Melbourne wins big.
Yes.
This is
$4.50 over 39.5 points last night, Melbourne.
Thank you. And Steve O'Time, who no doubt will talk about this ad nauseum.
He's not allowed to.
I'll get him first. We were hanging it on him about the Jeff Walsh exclusive. Well, Tom Brown and Caroline, they all jumped on it days after Steve O'Time had gone with it. So we are now the Nostradamus.
Yeah, but we don't go worry about what's happening in the past. We keep moving forward.
Oh, I like this.
Yes, because that's what's expected of Mark. He's there to break stories. He gives himself a platform every morning to do it. So we don't worry about what's happened. We worry about what's happening.
This is very good. No, I'm very happy with your tipping too. Oh, I've got an issue, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, we don't like
a betting issue.
Like, okay.
Bailey Fritsch is not my favourite player, but we'll move on.
Oh, he missed a few, didn't he?
No. That lack of handball.
There is an element of a fairly strong element of Bailey enjoying a goal and not particularly wanting to pass the ball to other people inside 50.
If they'd lost, that handball, non-handball in the first minute would have been the poster child for Melbourne.
I'll bring in Rama here.
Yeah,
good morning,
I've got to
Rama.
Explain this more to you.
Yes, good morning.
They were in trouble early, Melbourne. It looked like the Melbourne of the last 3 weeks in the first sort of 15 minutes or so. And I don't know necessarily when they did catch fire, or whether there was an incident, or whether it gradually evolved, particularly as we got into the second quarter. But early days, it didn't look like they had much fire about the Melbourne.
Yeah, it looked the same.
It did, yeah.
it looked the same for a little. I think they caught fire. Just there was a couple of passages of play where the pressure was enormous, but they won those pressure moments. The ball kept going their way rather than flicking back to Brisbane's way, and that's where I thought, oh, okay. It's rolling their way here. So, look, it wasn't. I don't know. It was a great game. I'm sort of in agreement with you, Whitey. Was it?
Oh, it's more about Brisbane.
Yeah, yeah.
They were.
So quarter time last night. Yeah, quarter time last night. It was Melbourne 2-4 to Brisbane 3-4. But really, the Lions should have been further in front with the opportunities that they had and the territory they had, the missed shots they had. And then in the second quarter, Melbourne kicked 6-6 to the Lions, just 1 goal. And you talk about territory inside 50s. I mean, the differential at halftime was horrendous from a Brisbane perspective. I was supremely confident last night with Melbourne.
You were.
But I'm more to the point that I was worried about them early thinking, because I actually watched it with my dad last night, and I said to him, about 20 minutes into the game, Melbourne's no different than what they were for the last 3 weeks. And I was expecting a much different showing from Melbourne. And then we obviously saw them get rolling. But I'll start with you, Rama. What was wrong with Brisbane last night?
Oh, I think when Zorko and Zach Bailey go out of the team, that brings them back to the pack because those two guys are their class. They're their sort of their ball movers.
They're line breakers.
Yeah, they're their ball movers. They're their X factors. They, you know, they can they change the game because they're unpredictable in the way they played. I think Brisbane may have looked a little top heavy last night in terms of their forward line. It just looked.
It's no shock. I mean, we've all been predicting it.
Yeah, it just it didn't quite work last night the way we expected. And then what Melbourne haven't been able to do over the previous 3 weeks when they lost is they haven't been able to move the ball. Brisbane allowed them to move the ball last night. They allowed them to get that flow going.
They allowed Angus Brayshaw to have 85 kicks in the first quarter to keep Melbourne in it, and then the rest of them just started motoring. I've never been, you know, there's some teams, I've never grasped Brisbane. I mean, yeah, they win up at the Gabba and all that sort of stuff. They've got so many, I mean, Dan McStay didn't do a good job of getting his contract up. Charlie Cameron in big games, non-Gabba games, I don't know what his record is, but he doesn't see it. And, you know, McCluggy's got a lot of it. They just, some of their players, about half of the team out there, you go, whoa, they look like average players, which when they're in the Gabba and other places, they don't look as bad. They were exposed.
If you look at Brisbane's form, though, over the course of the year, I don't think that they really set the world on fire at any point. If you look at the draw they've had a very favourable draw. They haven't played a lot of games at the Gabba, and I think it's, what is it, Rama, two of the last six, I think, they've been at the Gabba. So a lot of those games are to come, but they're against better opposition than what they've played to this point. So, I mean, they were on top of the ladder going into last night's game, and they've been belted by second by 10 goals. So correct. We thought that this round was going to be instructional on what we're going to see for the second half of the season by virtue of who's playing who. So do we worry about what we saw from Brisbane last night, or do we worry about what Melbourne did last night with everyone else in the competition?
I'd be more worried about Brisbane. I think Melbourne are who they are, and they've got their mojo back.
I'll put an asterisk on Brisbane without Zorko and Bailey.
Yeah, but two players, 10 goals.
Yeah, I know. I know.
They can't win down here. I mean, that's now 10 in a row. I mean, you have to win the flag down here. You have to play on the road and win games. And Brisbane have had the COVID years up there. They had their golden opportunities, and they blew it.
Mm. I think that's largely irrelevant, their MCG record, by virtue of the fact they haven't played there for a long time. And
I know. But
they were a poor team when they came down.
Yeah, I get that.
They're
but,
not the team they are now.
But they still don't win at the venue.
Yeah,
it's interesting if you look at the stats last night. Minus 1,200 metres gain, so territory game. Melbourne love playing that. Contested football, minus 38, and then clearances minus 11. Like they're big numbers. They're not. That's not just beating them. That's smashing them.
Mm.
That's smashing them in through the contest, through territory, through run, through carry. Yeah, look, I'm nervous about my prediction of Brisbane winning the premiership now.
Yes. Well, if you want to give us a call and your view on what you saw last night, or 1300 652 927, or you can send us a text as well, 0416 90 50 52.
Now, same game multis, we all love them.
No, I didn't last night.
I had a seven leg. Melbourne, minus 10.5, easy. Cam Rainer, kick a goal. Hugh McCluggage, 20. Angus Brayshaw, 20. James Harms, 15. Bailey Fritsch to kick 2+ goals. My last leg. Christian Petracca to kick a goal. First minute, Fritsch ignores him. He hits the post at the three-quarter time siren. Mm. That's cost me millions. Can you believe that? But it's Bailey Fritsch. Oh, my Lord.
You see, you left Lachie Neal out.
Oh, I don't want to have $1.01, you know, him to get whatever. What did he end up with?
22. No, he had a bad night. He didn't get close
to 30.
Yeah,
see, that's genius.
22. He had
Petracca to kick a
eight
goal.
Eight in about 5 minutes and ended up with 22.
Because I was on your theory that they're going to kick a lot of goals, so everyone's going to get one.
Yep.
Anyway, I've moved on.
16-21.
I wouldn't like to play
that 37
with
chances.
Correct. With or against Bailey Fritsch? He is an annoying player. He's right in that top bracket now of annoying players.
Why?
He'll join
well,
us.
Well, as a teammate, we saw what he does.
What, he kicked seven in a grand final? Six, seven?
That's irrelevant.
Was it? Seven or six?
Doesn't mean I have to like him.
You're just...
I don't like multi.
But you watch him as an opposition fan. There are players, and it's not a sledge on him. I mean, they're just players that annoy other opposition fans. But playing with him, you saw that little snippet. Petraka's like, "What are you doing, mate?"
Bailey Fitch will join us at 7:30 this morning to go through
the non-handball win
last night. John's on the road. He's given us a call. 1-300-652-927. Good morning, John.
How you going, fellas? I watched the game last night. They look pretty good, don't they? And Viney, mate. B-O-G. I'd love to have him at Essendon. That's what we need. I don't like that Fritz, mate. He's a bit of a love myself.
Yeah, there we are, Johnny.
In a crappy side, he probably wouldn't get a kick.
Oh, I wouldn't go near it.
He does his job. That's the only thing I hate, looking a good side. He fits in well, but I think if he was a bottom four side, mate, he probably wouldn't get a, wouldn't get a kick. But, yeah, they played well with Ed Gorn and just shows how much May is missed in the back line, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I saw last night, and I think they're flag favourites.
Yeah, well done, John.
Thank you, John.
Well, I want to ask John about tonight.
No, he's gone. Bad line.
Bad line.
Interestingly, on the odds on the premiership, so Melbourne going into last night's game, $3.80 at the tab. This morning as we wake up, $2.90.
Yeah.
So that's a significant move.
It deserved a wind.
Significant move. Craig's also given us a call from Mount Martha on 1-300-652-927. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, boys. The dynamic trio, eh? A-team, you think?
Oh, I thought so.
A-plus.
Yeah. Yeah, don't cut it short, Craig.
Look, I'm a Bomber supporter, but I was interested to watch last night. I wanted your thoughts, but I think the defining moment in the game was when James Harms had been wearing Lachie Neale like a glove, of course, early on. And when James Harms broke clear at sort of centre-half forward and put one through, I think it was all over Red Rover after that.
It's a good point. Mm. I like that they put him to Neale and rather than, we'll back our system. I hate that.
Yeah.
And Harms made his name as this type of player. But he kicked two and ran off him, and that's exactly what a great tagger, for want of a better word, does.
I'm still a believer in teams that got to take the opposition's greatest strength away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Lachie Neale is one of those. Lachie Neale is a superstar player. Just he's active, he's creative, his hands are terrific. But yeah, he was a non-factor last night.
It was interesting. We talked to Jed Adcock. And we talked to Troy Chaplin before the game yesterday to get a bit of a feel for what might have happened last night. And I think it was a really good thing. Thanks for your call, Craig. And he talked, Scotty, asked about what to do with Lachie Neale. And he talked about how, well, we're not going to start anyone on him, but if he starts to get a bit of an issue, we've got a plan. Now, Lachie started really well. He had eight possessions in the first quarter, but he got them all in a real cluster where Brisbane were looking quite good around the contest.
Out of the centre a lot,
and then they went, right, enough of that, and they put Harms to him. And it was almost like that was when the game actually changed.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you, Rama, about Jack Viney, because we've talked so much about Clayton Oliver and Christian Petrarca and the dominance that they have on the game and how important they are to Melbourne. But how important is Jack Viney to Melbourne? Because
it's one of the best games I've seen him play.
I agree with you, but
I think he's had an underrated year.
He has.
But he's had injuries for 2 or 3 years, hasn't he? We haven't seen Jack have a good
runner. He was very good last year.
Yeah, but he was overshadowed by others.
Yeah,
It's my game. I'm just doing it all.
If Jack Viney's the third wheel in that midfield, that's a pretty good third wheel.
It feels, though, that he creates the chaos around the contest. Mm. So we know what Oliver goes and gets the ball, but in the contest, but the way Viney crashes around and throws his body in there and gets people worried about him, the way he charges into the contest, that when he's up and about, it seems to be that Melbourne's up and about.
Well, he creates that physical presence.
Yeah.
Because he sort of plays on the edge the way
absolutely.
He attacks the ball at times. But you look at last night, so he's had 34 possessions, 19 of those contested. Oof. 8 clearances, 7 tackles. It's a big game of football.
That's great numbers.
It's a big, big game of football. And, he's just, he looks fit. He looks strong. He looks, you know. It'll be interesting come the end of the season when Melbourne do their best and fairest count. Like, if you listen to Simon Goodwin after the game, he heaped praise on him. Like, Max Gorn's not playing. Jack's our captain tonight. He was outstanding. I think internally, he's rated a lot higher than externally that we rate him.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. He gets overshadowed, but how good was Luke Jackson? He's a different ruckman. He's sort of the...
He's not on baller.
Nick Natter, Nui follow-up, but even more athletic. It was just great to see a kid. You know, he came in with pressure, man. Your big man's out. And he just added another layer, didn't he, to that running power of Melbourne.
I thought you were going to say add another $100,000.
Oh, no doubt. As I mentioned about McStay, so Luke Jackson went up 100. McStay's gone down.
6 foot five, and the only player that had more tackles on the ground than him last night was Hugh McCluggage.
Does that change just from one game, but he goes to Fremantle and he sits behind Darcy.
Yeah, why would he go to Fremantle? That's what
he
I'm
goes
asking.
To West Coast and he could be the heir apparent to Nick Natanui.
Why go to Fremantle and be second wheel? Why don't you stay here and be second wheel in a place you love?
Well, I think he wants to go home.
Oh, so he doesn't like Melbourne. Is that...
I think the lure for him, if he was to go, isn't the fact that he can
this
get
annoys
all,
me.
All sorts of money. It's more that he wants to be closer to his family.
Oh, come on. He's 20, how old is he? 21? 2?
21.
I don't like people going home for family reasons. I think it's half a front most of the time. Adam, you're a player manager. You deal in this space.
No, I think it's
a convenient
excuse. No, I think it's real.
To get an extra $1 million.
No, I think it's absolutely real.
Man up, reward the club who took you and put...
What's the longest you've ever been away from your family?
I left at 17. I've never been back to Colac. I've done all that. Don't give me the sob story.
What's the longest you've ever been away from your family?
Oh, probably 5 minutes.
Yeah. I lived overseas for 6 months. It's not that difficult. Oh. You send them a phone call, FaceTime, g'day mum and dad, love your work. Come on, Adam.
Across this sporting state, RSN 927's Breakfast Club.
24 past 6, if you want to give us a call and be involved in the program this morning, 1300 652 927, or send us a text 0416 90 50 52. Plenty of other sport going on as well. We'll get back to the footy shortly. Steve-O will join us with all the latest footy news. But in the swimming overnight, the World Championships, 2 gold medals, 1 to Molly O'Callaghan in the 100-metre freestyle. Now, there's a number of reasons why that's significant. Firstly, it's a gold medal to Australia and it's a gold medal to Molly. But that was the event that Shayna Jack was supposed to be participating in before she broke her hand in the pool, as we found out yesterday, Scotty. And she would have been favoured to beat Molly. So it just shows the devastation for Shayna Jack, who is actually on a plane on her way home now.
How did she break her hand?
In the water.
You practice your... practice your turns, or you think you're trying to... You know, your stroke comes down and you... Boom!
Scotty, how did she break her hand?
No, that's exactly what happened.
Nah.
She hit the wall with force. Maybe she got the, contact with the wall wrong and banged it. Hard, Adam, hard.
That's what happened. She was in the pool and she got involved
in
the wall.
She didn't fall over. She was in the actual pool. Maybe got on the wrong,
Anyway, that's
Scott
happened.
Scott Hall's into this story.
Our man Zach Stubbody Cook also won gold medal. We spoke to Zach a couple of weeks ago on the program, so he won the 200 metres breaststroke. So that's some action from Budapest overnight. In the golf after, we're not fully through the first round of the Travellers on the PGA Tour. Rory McIlroy shot 8 under.
Oh, no, so predict that. I've backed Leishman. Talk to me.
No, he's not on the front page of the leaderboard. So McIlroy, 8 under. Schauffele at 7 under. Cam Davis, the best of the Australians there, at 5 under. But we have got golfers out on the course at the moment, so we'll find out where Leishman's at. The BMW overnight on the European Tour or the World Tour. Haytun Lee, 10 under to lead there. So that's a fairly...
What? Opening round, 10 round, under?
10 under, yeah. He's been threatening to do that for a while. He throws in those really low rounds, but he can't do it over 4 rounds. So we'll see what happens there in Germany. Now, some interesting things here in the world of cricket. So third test last night, New Zealand versus England. New Zealand batting first, threw 90 overs, 5 for 225. So that's slow going.
Where are they playing?
They're playing at Headingley, this one. So They were 5 for 123, so they've settled to be 5 for 225. Drew Mitchell again in the runs, 78 not out. Blundell also getting some runs, the keeper, 45 not out. 2H to Broad and to Leach. In the Australia A, Sri Lanka A game, that finished yesterday, so a tour game there where we've got sort of the, obviously the second-tier players. Scotty Boland took 7 wickets. Mark Steckity took 6 wickets over the course of the match. John Holland got 2 second-innings wickets, but that game ended in a draw. But the interesting thing I wanted to ask you guys about, and our audience, 1300 652 927, Cricket Australia have decided that they are going to review David Warner's leadership ban, which is a lifelong leadership ban in Australia, because they are that keen for him to participate in the Big Bash that maybe if he was a captain of one of the teams, it might actually get him to play.
See, I understood it was Australia, but at any competition in Australia, you couldn't captain.
Correct.
Oh, well, that's ridiculous. I thought it was just we're taking away your honour of ever, you know, the baggy green. I don't care if he captains the Sydney Thunder. Why are we going to lose sleep about that?
Well, he was banned.
No, well, that's silly. He should be allowed to do it.
So he was banned from being a captain or a vice-captain of any international or domestic Australian cricket team. So that's 4 years ago now. So it's being apparently looked at. Rama, what do you think about that?
What are we talking about? He's not going to be in a leadership position in the Australian team.
No,
we would assume.
Well, I don't know.
Well, this would open the door, maybe.
It could be a sort of a catch-all thing that if it gets overturned, he's available to do anything and everything.
So who's asking the question here? Is it the Australian team? Is it David Warner? Who's asking?
I think it's the authorities who want to generate this Big Bash because they're desperate for him to play. Correct. And if they can say, mate, you can be a captain again.
Yeah, we can pay you this much money.
Correct. 4 years, you learnt your lesson, all's forgiven. Until he writes his book, which is still about 10 years away.
Look, it makes a little bit
written, pretty much.
Yeah. It makes a little bit of a mockery of the ban in the first place. So, do all the wrongs of what happened in South Africa all those years ago now just are forgotten about and wiped away? Now, I think what we need to understand is David Warner since then has been a terrific player. There's no doubt about that. But what has he done to continue to improve himself as a leader? Has he done certain courses? Has he done...
He's not allowed to be a leader.
Yes.
Well, no, but I know that. You can still improve yourself as a person.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. I'm neither here nor there with it, really.
But it's the first step. Then if he does this, we can shuffle him into the vice captaincy. Not that Cummings needs help. Cummings and Smith, you'd think, are in for the long haul. So why does it hurt?
He's 35, is he?
Yeah, I mean, he's coming towards the end of his international career. I mean, he could play, franchise cricket till he's 40 if he wanted to. Now, whether he does or he doesn't, I don't know. But I think it's interesting in that he hasn't played in the BBL for a while. There is now an opportunity, it looks like, that the Australian international players can, because this South Africa tour, or the one days, aren't going to be played. Now, he's a very good captain strategically, particularly in short form cricket. He's done it overseas. He's done it here before. He used to be he has captained the Sydney Thunder. So he knows how to do it. He's captained Australia in short form cricket. I just think it's interesting is that if he's going, well, I don't need to play, but if there was a lure there to be captain, and he goes, oh, well, if it's captaincy involved, I'd be interested. Is that him not holding Cricket Australia to ransom, but I don't know. I think it's an interesting dynamic where he's almost sort of putting it back on them potentially.
I think the more interesting part of this story is what James Warburton has said to Cricket Australia about, you know, putting their money where their mouth is and showing that the Big Bash is the number one priority by having the test stars available. Because you're right, we haven't seen David Warner in there. So we haven't seen Steve Smith in there, Pat Cummins in there, Mitchell Starc in there. We've never seen those players in that competition. So I think that's the interesting part. If those players then do become available, what does that actually do to the competition?
Well, we should find out this year. As I said before, the summer was not looking good because apart from the overseas players, the big one's unlikely to come because of everything else that's going on, at least to come for a significant portion of the tournament. It now appears that after the Sydney Test, the Australian players will be able to play 2-3 weeks of the Big Bash, which should give it a boost as the interest starts to wane a little bit as you sort of get into that mid part of January when the legitimate holiday period is over. So I think that is significant. But I just think the David Warner thing, it's not so much about the Big Bash. It's more about, was the ban too heavy at the time, if they're thinking about overturning, or if they did overturn it, or are we comfortable with Warner coming back and having a leadership role? Are we comfortable about David Warner being in the Australian team?
Well, was it fair that, so the ban suggested he was the instigator rather than Steve Smith?
Well, he got the most significant.
That's
ban.
What I mean. So, if Smith was the captain and knew about it, what's the difference that Warner was the vice captain and knew about it?
Well, the reality is no one knows what really
Correct.
Happened.
So he's written the book already. Can I get a leaked copy of that?
Well, I think a fair bit of it's been written.
Because he is going to completely blow the whole thing up. It's going to be fantastic.
My understanding is he doesn't.
What, he doesn't tell the truth?
Well, no, I don't think he does blow everything up like was suggested. Anyway, that's a different issue. But, yeah,
What do you think? Are you yay or nay?
I personally think that to put a lifetime ban on him from any leadership role was a very strong penalty. But again, I'm in the dark as much as anybody in the sense that I don't know what he did. So it's very hard to make any real call on his suspension when we don't really know what his involvement was.
We know
he was involved, but we don't know what it was.
The younger player, take the sandpaper out and this is how you do it. Off you go and do it. And he was seen instigating it all in that moment, allegedly. You know, Smith and that wandered past. That's what
their line
is. But
we don't know whether that's true or not.
Oh, we know there was... Yeah, well, we're putting one and one together and getting two.
Mm.
Yes, I look forward to the book now.
There's a couple of text messages here suggesting that Warner owes the Big Bash.
Why?
Well, no, I don't know. That's just
didn't crowd him.
He owes the Big Bash.
He didn't play. He came through the Australian team, didn't he?
Yeah, he played for the Sydney Thunder there for a while. Yeah. But yeah. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting little tidbit.
I did some research, Scotty.
That's what you're best
yeah.
at.
Yeah. The sort of Shana Jack breaking her hand it's sort of fascinated me how you can...
Unsurprisingly, there's two stories.
How you can do that in a swimming pool. Now, it's been reported that she was in the practice pool and she got it caught in another swimmer's suit.
Oh, hello.
Mm.
That's a better story. Getting a bit close.
Yes.
I hope it was a male swimmer's lower trunks.
It's reported that the girl in front of her in the practice pool turned.
Yes.
And Shana, I don't think, saw her and got, as she was doing her stroke.
Yes.
Got caught in the
and that sort of pulled it the wrong way.
Yeah, that's broken the bone in her hand.
Wow.
There you go. Now, we've got to get to a break soon, but a couple other things I wanted to mention.
Still got holes in it, this story.
Travis Head has done a hamstring, so he's missing the last of the one-day matches, but just a week out from the first test, you question whether he would play.
Well, who's next in line?
Well, this is the thing. Who is next in line?
21-day hamstring it is. Steve-O will report on that.
Yeah, who else is
Who have they got over there? Give me names.
Well, they've got about 568 players over there, so they've got a few to choose from. But
you usually anoint someone I've never
heard of. No, I don't know what they'll do. I don't know whether the hamstring is serious enough to have him out of the first test, but it's yet another issue, another soft tissue injury for the Australians over in Sri Lanka. They've had all sorts of problems.
You know who it opens the door for?
Glenn Maxwell.
Correct.
Oh, yes. Is he there?
He's there.
Oh, yeah, he's done.
So anyway,
AMAC will put him in. Ronald will put him in.
In the world of netball, Kira Austin is out of the grand final with COVID.
The prelim.
So... it's all unravelling for the Vixens close to the end of the season.
She's a goalie.
And what can you tell us about Dyson Daniels? Because it is NBA draft time, Rammer.
Well, I know he's going to go very high in the draft. That's one thing.
Where's he been playing? What uni?
Well, he went to the G League. He didn't go to university. So He went straight to the G League and he's earned about 725,000 playing there this year.
Okay.
So he averaged 11 or so points this year and 6 or so rebounds, but I don't know a lot about him, Scotty. It's an interesting one where you and I, with our vintage of NBL names that we know, have sort of been looking, well, who's his dad?
Ricky Daniels.
Yeah, and that's not ringing a bell to me. So this seems to me to be a kid from Bendigo that's just bloody good at basketball.
They found him at 14. Yeah. He's been in squads since then and went through the Vic squads to Australian squads.
6'8", so he's a big unit.
Size 14 shoes.
Yeah.
Wingspan of 2.11 meters. He looks a bit like Ben Simmons.
Well, watching the highlights of him, he's very, very capable. Now, is it the right decision to go to the NBA draft as a 19-year-old as he is?
Absolutely it is.
Now, he goes from making $725,000 if he's drafted in the first round of the draft today to $4.4 million.
I think, as his manager, I think that's a good decision.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting.
No, it's exciting. I mean, we keep rolling
them out.
It's
great for Australian basketball.
Yeah. So he'll be in the Boomers squad then?
And yes, it's good that there's different avenues to it, different pathways to it, but this sort of thing is possible for happening.
Welcome aboard the Breakfast Club.
20 to 7 on this Friday morning, Adam White, Scott Gullen and Adam Rabinaskis with you. Don't forget, after 7 o'clock this morning, Mark Hunter and Nick Quinn will preview a big day of racing at Caulfield. We'll hopefully get the quaddie. We'll hopefully get the formula bet, which we got a couple of weeks ago last time Mark was part of the program. And don't forget, from 8:30 this morning, it'll be Michael Felgate. Mick Sharkey will be in after 9. And then to sort of wrap things up in the morning programming, it'll be Gareth Hall from 10:30 this morning. But we have got Mark Stevens in the studio with all the latest footy news. Stevo, good morning.
Whitey, great to be here. And you mentioned, what's Scotty talking about?
Nostradamus.
No, we don't. We don't worry about what's happening.
No, I like to give credit where it's due.
No, we don't like these
he
as
needs,
revealed.
His confidence is always...
That's rubbish.
His confidence is always low.
No, you're right.
His ego needs to be massaged sometimes.
No, it's what we do, Whitey. So it's what we do here, so we don't need to gloat too much. We'll just quickly back over the fact, though, that... No, but just to clarify what we're talking about, obviously Jeff Walsh coming in as an advisor, consultant-type role to take a look at the football department.
Weeks ago you were telling me.
That was Monday.
Yeah, that's right. But
how do you feel about sort of people... rehashing your...
Well, Tommy Brown...
Caroline.
2 days later.
Caroline. And I took, obviously, he listens to the show, which is great.
They all do.
But the interesting thing is, Ramo, and you know footy clubs well, would you be nervous if you're Benamafio, David Noble, with Jeff Walsh coming in? I mean, he came into Carlton. We saw what happened there last year. Is this a sign of change or seismic change coming at the end of the home and away season?
Yes. Adam, you're thinking long and hard. Is it yes or no? Yes.
I think you can review things and improve things. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to go and change your whole coaching staff and your football
Who's department. The most nervous, the CEO or the coach, about Jeff Walsh's presence?
Is he just doing football department?
No, I think he's also spread... The role has even spread wider to the top office, Whitey. Now, the issue is, obviously, Walsh, he's been a CEO, a club CEO at North. Also, he's been a head of footy at other clubs. So if you're David Noble or Benamafia, you're not overly comfortable, I wouldn't have thought, with Walshy sort of wandering in.
No.
you're taking a lot of time to process
this. Yeah, I am. I'm just thinking about it.
Okay. We'll come back at 8 o'clock.
But sometimes these appointments, Whitey, as you know, they start, you know, and the domino's falling, and they're an excuse for change, aren't they? We brought an outside person in. We've had a look at it. And you see that in the release, that Walshy's the guy to come in and just sharpen things up.
But isn't that what Paul Roos did?
He was more, he was overseeing, and then he went to Hawaii after one training session. So.
He has to be back.
Is he still part of it or not?
No, he's not on the books. He just quietly disappeared. It was a great appointment at the time. We did see him down there a couple of times, but yeah.
I think there's a reason why he stayed in the States.
He's
why?
With Tammy in it? America.
Anyway, all right, what else you got?
Right, Scotty. Well, yeah.
Another world exclusive.
Just quickly last night, Whitey, yeah, I think Thursday night footy could be alive with 37,000. Oh. I predicted 21.5. I know you mentioned this briefly. You were thinking low 30s. That was a very good crowd last night on a pretty average night for weather. So perhaps Thursday night footy could be a winner, crowd-wise.
Well, it was first versus second.
I know, but it was Melbourne versus Brisbane, so it's not Carlton-Richmond or Geelong versus Collingwood.
Yeah, no, I think...
Well, I think importantly, you don't react over one crowd or whether it be a good crowd or a bad crowd. I mean, there was only, what was it, about 20,000 for Richmond and Port Adelaide. So that was significantly higher there, obviously, last night than what we had for that game. But I think you've just got to let it play out over the year and then assess it. I don't think it is based on how many people turn up. It's what the TV ratings are as to whether it continues on a more regular basis next year.
Yeah, and you mentioned Brisbane, of course, they've had a good fixture, as you said. I just quickly did some research, like Rammer. They've beaten two top eight sides this year. So Sydney round 7, St Kilda round 13. That's it. So two wins against top eight sides. They've lost against Geelong, Frio and Melbourne. So only the five matches out of, what, 14 have been against other top eight sides. So I think we have to wait, Whitey, until the run home gets tougher. It's been the best draw of any club.
All right, what else you got?
Just dismiss that.
Okay, you just dismiss that. But this is a segue. Segue into Chris Fagan.
Yep.
Okay, so segue into Chris Fagan. The contested work on Brisbane, they were smashed around the ball last night. Interesting, after the game, he went back to the dark old days. Let's have a listen.
This game was always going to hinge on who would win the territory battle, so therefore who wins the contest, and Melbourne won it hands down. And that's why we should have lost the game by a lot more than we did tonight. We're lucky they didn't kick straight. That's as bad as we've played in a long, long time. That takes me back to the first couple of years.
Well, I think the interesting part about that was that he really set the tone before the game. He had an interview on Fox Footy where he talked about how we're going to be measured about how tough we are around the ball, because we know Melbourne's good at that. And to come up with a minus 38 contested ball differential at the end of the night, not only does he have clearly Brisbane failed the test, but they've been embarrassed a little bit because they'd really pumped themselves up to match it with Melbourne in that area and came up so short.
And the Melbourne coach, Simon Goodwin, he was stoic last night. He said, we're just sticking to our plans. We don't listen to all the fuss and we just go about the way we go. And his language here was pretty interesting, the way he went about it.
Really clear on our method, really clear on how we want to play. And whether we've lost three in a row or we've won 10 in a row, it doesn't really matter. We just go back to what works for us. And tonight we did that. I thought our ability to execute role for a long period of time tonight was outstanding. And, it's just full credit to the players and especially the leaders. You know, I thought, you know, Viney, Lever, Stevie May, Alex Neil-Bullen, Angus Brayshaw, I thought they were terrific. Christian Petrarca.
So execute role is the key buzz phrase there, Whitey. They all did it pretty well. Clayton Oliver couldn't get a mention there, but he was handy too.
Yeah, what's the latest with Jared Lyons?
Yeah, well, the sternum injury, it'll be interesting to see how he obviously came off. That was a heavy hit, wasn't it, our own Jared Lyons? It was tough of him to come back on, clearly in doubt for the next week's game against the Bulldogs, no doubt, Thursday night.
So he came back on and played for probably half an hour and then he got subbed out early in the last
Very
quarter.
Brave to come back. And then you could see him sort of clutching the chest area. That's a nasty injury, straight down the middle, basically. Mm. It was one of those hits that they say straight down the middle. That was Scotty.
And Harris Andrews did something to his shoulder, OC joint. You know, they're limping home.
Tends to come off and on a little bit, Harris Andrews, doesn't he? Some contract news, Whitey. Oh. Tim English, that's official. So 2 years at the Bulldogs, which is a good get. Of course, he's out at the
Only
moment.
Two.
With concussion. That takes him to free agency, Scotty.
Oh, okay.
So they're working that
That's annoying.
I think it was certainly mooted for 2 years for quite a while, for the last month or so, Rammer. So what would his value be open market?
Oh, write your own ticket, Adam.
Yeah,
Eight, nine to leave somewhere, to go somewhere, not at Footscray.
Yeah, it's more his trade value rather than what he's actually getting paid. What you'd have to actually have to give to get him, I think, is more relevant than what's a club. Like, club can pay whatever they want, but it's more, well, is it two first-round draft picks? Is it the first round and the second round? What is it? Or is there a particular player that you would, you know, we don't see that very often anymore, where player for player is traded anymore.
Is he worth more than Luke Jackson, dollars-wise, to go back to Perth?
Pretty close.
Who would you prefer out of those two?
Oh, Tim English.
Steve?
Tim English is a superstar.
Tim English, just a bigger body.
No.
I'd go Luke Jackson.
I'd go Luke Jackson every day. Yeah.
You haven't watched him play, clearly.
Yeah, I have.
I don't think you've watched him close enough.
It's a good debate.
You see when Tim English was monstered by Brodie Grundy a couple of times?
Yeah, when he was finding his feet. You're not allowed to find your feet?
I'm just saying.
Have you watched him since he's this year?
Yeah, I have.
I'd take Luke Jackson every day of the week. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't even hesitate.
Steve-O, you can
have everyone can have their opinions. Yep. I just think a bigger body. He's I would say that Tim English is a Scott Wine who can run, like a cross-country runner. So that's pretty medalist. Handy football.
I think no. This is the problem, I reckon, with the way a lot of people see football, is that it's not...
saying I don't see it?
It's not, no, but it's because the same debate happens with Jordan Dugowie. It's the capacity to do it versus the actual to do it, or the actual doing it. So Tim English has the potential to be one of the best players in the competition.
I'd argue he's dominated more games than Luke Jackson has.
But that's not the question was, who would you prefer?
What happened in the third quarter of the grand final last year?
He got a couple of tap-outs. That's okay.
Yeah, that wasn't great. But he's had a
Tim
very
English
good year.
Was banged up.
Would have thought that's why'd the most important game of the year.
When he's been available.
That was Tim English versus Luke Jackson.
No, it wasn't. It was
how much more evidence
Steph
do you need?
Steph Martin or something. Was Steph Martin playing? Someone like that.
They're both pretty handy
Zane
players.
Zane Cordy it was in the middle.
Anyway, we win, Whitey. We win the argument.
We might ask Mark Hunter what he thinks when he comes in.
But, Rama, do you understand what I'm saying is that a lot of players are judged now on what they have the capacity to do or their potential actual input.
Well, you've got to... So their actual input, you've got to actually work out how many times they actually do that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Mm. That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of players that will do it one out of seven or eight times and it's talked about as, oh, but he can do this and he can do... Yeah, of course he can do that. But what about the other seven or eight games before he does it again?
I'm not sure English has played a poor game this year. In fact, he's super
English has
consistent
been fantastic this year when he's
It's just the injuries. Injuries that really
held
him up.
But he hasn't played a lot of games.
He was in rolling All-Australian type of form at one stage and then he went out. He's been concussed. He's had injuries, hamstrings.
Yeah. I can't believe the bias.
Can I throw a name at you, Steve-O?
Jack Lekosius.
Oh, he stayed.
That's not bad, is it? Good extension, Whitey. 4 years, significant for the Suns. I think just as a watershed moment in many ways that they're now keeping their players, Rammer. And is it a place, an aspirational place now to play footy?
Oh, I would. 22 degrees up there every day in the winter. It would suit me fine.
So if Isaac Rankin now joins the party, that means that those guys from that draft or from that era... They're all pretty much locked away. Ben King, Isaac Rankin, Jack Lekosius.
What it means is they've completely changed around their culture. That players want to stay there. Stuart Jew's doing, you know, the job that he was employed to do. They're winning games now. So it's amazing when you win games how that's the best piece of culture. Winning sort of band-aids most problems. Not Absolutely. That I'm saying there's problems up there, but it's amazing when you're winning.
Very good point.
Do you have something for me, Scotty?
Martin Pakula, talk to me.
Yeah, interesting. I think today that will be official, of course. Such a big figure in racing. You know, the Minister for Sport and Racing. Looks like Adam, he will be pulling the pin today. It will be official with three other key ministers. So he's had a big impact, taking politics aside, on the sporting landscape here in Victoria.
Absolutely. Not only sport, but also the racing minister. He's had a significant role to play. He's going to be very, very difficult to
replace.
Very
forthcoming. I think he's been good with his media work, very accessible.
He must have a job in racing. Ready to go.
No, I'm not sure. Don't know.
He's got a law background, so he could go back to the law, but you'd think that in some sort of form, CEO areas in the sporting world, I think Martin Pakula would do pretty well. Now, just quickly,
news. Just talking about culture. It's potentially 12 of Dan Andrews' cabinet.
I know.
Which may not be there coming into the election.
So there's a November election. It says a lot. They're sending a message going, Danny boy, you're not our favourite, son. We're out. It's outrageous what they're doing to him. All his key...
You've got to build culture.
Yeah, it's a refresh, a rejuvenation. They're going to have to go back to the draft.
Might have to go back to politics, though. Your side of the fence might
The Libs might be a chance.
Yeah, you could be back.
All right. What else you got before we let you go?
Jackson, son of Glenn, of course, that's a great story, isn't it, that he's making his debut at the Kangaroos. Some more social media work. We love that, don't we, the first game of social media stuff. I know you hang out for that, Whitey. Patrick Dangerfield.
Yeah, this is one. This is an interesting one.
We're still not back. That calf. I mean, it was originally just a niggle and a bit of a cork, and he's still
well,
out.
Scotty, clearly, I was down there on Wednesday, and he did complete the full training session under my watchful eye.
He had a torn calf. Let's not muck around.
But I mean, he trained the whole session. He must have pulled up a bit sore at him. Mm.
What's it been? 4 or 5 weeks?
I reckon 5 now.
So that's torn calf areas. And new president at Hawthorn will come in December, Peter Nankerville, commercial lawyer. He said he's going to be different to Jeff. There's only one Jeff Kennett, and I think he's spot on there.
Yes, I think there is. All right, thank you very much.
This is Friday form for the Kia Stinger. It took 7 years to create and 4.9 seconds to understand why. Book a thrill ride today. This is John Henry. Sit back and enjoy our Saturday afternoon at the races. This Saturday, Caulfield's Winter Race Day and Wodonga. We've got Brisbane for the Group 1 Tats Tiara and Sydney just to get us started. The RSN team will be right here with the trackside news, selections and the calls. Loving our winter racing Saturday on RSN.
The Footy Preview with Boomer Harvey from Greyhound Racing Victoria. Victorian Greyhound Racing has never been so accessible. Every Victorian Greyhound race is live and free with Greyhound Racing Victoria's watchdog app and website.
It is 25 to 8 as I look outside. It looks like the rain is starting to clear. It's been a bit of a wet old night, but the weather isn't meant to be too bad today.
Winter solstice.
Tomorrow.
I don't even say the word right, do I?
No, you don't.
Solaced?
Solstice.
Boomer knows what that is.
Exactly. Thanks to JRV. Boomer's in here this morning. Good morning.
Yes, I learned that when I went to Reservoir Private. That was my year 12 school. Yeah, Reservoir Private.
Okay. Reservoir Private.
Where's the sun?
Well, that's what we call it out there, remember?
What's the sun do on the winter?
It sounds like a hospital.
Solstice.
You know what? I was talking about it. We went to Darwin. I've got no idea about this stuff. I'll make this clear. I've got no idea. We went to Darwin the other week. We trained at Arden Street, Melbourne. 6 degrees, rain. You get on a plane, you travel 4.5 hours, and it's 31 degrees and humid. You get back on the plane, come back, and it's 6 degrees again. It's only 4.5 hours on a plane. How does that actually work?
I'm actually with you on this.
I understand it, but I don't understand it. Does that make sense?
Rammer can explain this to me.
Of course he can.
Why is it so...
Getting closer
to the equator.
Yeah.
But that's so dramatic. Four and a half hours, it's not far enough to be that difference. 25 degrees difference it was. Ridiculous. No wonder why we didn't win.
Hey, we've got so much to talk to you about. Obviously, last night, there's two games tonight, and then, of course, over the course of the weekend. But I am interested. I mean, North Melbourne has been in the news all year, unfortunately, for most of the time for the wrong reasons. But there's good and bad, not good and bad news. There's really good news and interesting news to talk about. The Jeff Walsh appointment, because you know Jeff very well. You're at the footy club when he was at the footy club, and he's sort of come back to have a look around, ask a few questions. How does that make you feel, and how does it make the club feel?
It makes me feel okay. doesn't bother me a great deal, to be honest with you. I can't speak on behalf of everyone, because it's just been announced, obviously, and we literally only found out about it yesterday. We had a meeting yesterday before it hit the media. Now, Jeff was there when I first started as a young kid, and he's under the same banner as Dennis. Very ruthless, the way they go about it. Very straightforward, the way he delivers his messages. How does that make everybody else? How potentially could that make everybody else feel? Maybe a little bit uncomfortable, I'm not sure. When you do a review, I'll be careful because I don't know the proper answer, Whitey, but when you do a review, they come in and they dissect everything in your football club, and I don't think Walsh's report's going to say everything is perfect because we're not winning. So he's going to find some sort of stuff that's probably not working as good as it should be. We don't know what we don't know, so it's hard to change. So Walsh will probably find something in there. I'm tipping that will make a few people feel a little bit uncomfortable, but at the same time, it's to improve our football club. So is it needed right now? The win-loss scenario says, it probably is.
Mm. And then the other news around another Archer playing this weekend. And as Steve-O said earlier, there was the social media of him mentioning it to his mum and his dad and the emotion attached to that. They're a very emotional family at the best of times. But just to explain the significance of that to the footy club and also for you, who would have known Jackson from a very long time ago.
It's It's crazy because the people that see Glenn Archer or don't know Glenn Archer, they see the way he played, and he was a tough guy. He's one of the most emotional guys I've ever seen. He'll cry in a movie, and you think Glenn Archer, no way. And it was pure emotion yesterday when you seen that footage of the when he was telling mum and dad. So it was fantastic to have Arch in the team. The way he's been training and playing his VFL football, I don't think Arch is going to come off the halfback flank and have 25 touches tomorrow. I can't see that happening. On Sunday. But what I can tell you, he fights to the death. He is unbelievable. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. He's a competitor like I haven't seen an 18-year-old kid for a long time. Even the other yesterday at training, we'll do some competitive stuff, and he got beaten in two contests straight away. And we said, all right, that's enough. He's like, no, I want to go again. He's a competitor. So he'll lose some one-on-ones, he'll halve some one-on-ones, and he'll win some one-on-ones, but nothing will happen through lack of trying for young Jacko.
Yeah, but Josh Rochelle might not touch the ball either.
Yeah, that's right.
That's the way he plays the game. Yeah.
He's a goer, I tell you. And he needs another 12 months in the gym too. Like, he has developed from where he came into the football club to now has been unbelievable, but he still needs another 12 months to develop properly until he gets some muscle and beats a really hard-nosed player. But you are going to see a young kid fight like you haven't seen a young kid fight before.
Is he dad's size or taller or smaller?
I think he might be a bit taller than Glenn.
He's a ruckman then?
No, he's not. Well, Glenn wasn't. Actually, Glenn's not very tall.
I know, he's not tall at all.
It's amazing. He played tall.
He played as a key position player, virtually.
Body is completely different.
Yeah.
Very skinny and agile Arch. I'm so excited because you're right, Whitey. I've seen him grow up. I've seen him since he was probably 4 years old, maybe even a little bit younger. And every year you just come and you see him, and then he gets into our father-son program, and you see him as a 16-year-old, and you think, oh, gee, he's a little man now. And to come into the club, and my job is to work with those boys, so to have him under my wing has been fantastic just to work with, because I've known him for so long.
What number was Glenn?
11.
Who's 11 at the moment?
Luke McDonald.
Yeah. Should have given up his jumper, clearly.
No, I'm the...
Too many games in.
Yeah, no, but I think these young kids need to come in and carve their own career as well. I don't think...
Create their own story.
Yeah, I don't think Glenn would have wanted Jacko to wear 11, and I don't think Jacko would have wanted to wear 11. So the romance part of that's fantastic. Oh, you're 11 like that, but I think carve your own career, young fella.
Mm. Now, Taryn Thomas, we might as well quickly talk about Marty Roos.
Yep.
Taryn Thomas has served his time.
Has he served his time? He didn't get reported, did he?
No, didn't he get sent back to win back the respect of his teammates?
Yeah, and find some form.
Yeah?
Yeah. So he's back in. Fantastic.
Can you tell me more about that, Brent?
No, he went back and played in the VFL. He played okay. He had 20-odd touches, I think. Had a really good first half. And he's trained really well this week, so his spot's back.
That's all you've got to do. That.
So one last one on North Melbourne, since we're talking about it. Going back to Hobart, where you do play good footy down there.
Yep.
You do worry most teams whenever you get down there. How much is that a confidence booster for a team that hasn't won for a long time, knowing that you're going to an area where the opposition will feel uncomfortable?
Yeah, they will. And Tassie's been really good for us over a long period of time, and we play the ground quite well. We haven't played it quite as well of late, but I think that's just got to do with our form. But we love going down there, and Ramo, he'll know this as well. When things are not going great for you, it's actually great to go on the road together because you just get away with the boys. There's no crap going on. You know that you're going there, you need to get a job done, and you get out of there. And that's the mentality of the boys. It has been for a long time when we travel together, and I used to love travelling, and I know the boys still love travelling and being together. They'll leave tomorrow and be ready to go on Sunday.
Okay, let's throw it back open from what we saw last night. We did talk about it earlier on in the program, but for those that are just jumping in their car and heading into work and want to know the team's views on what took place last night, it was a big win to Melbourne, 16-21, 117 over Brisbane, 7-11-53. The Lions led by 10 points at quarter time before Melbourne turned it on in the second quarter, kicking 6-6 to Brisbane's 1. It was Brisbane ranked 1 versus Melbourne ranked 2. It didn't reflect that on the scoreboard last night.
It certainly didn't, Whitey. The Demons are back. I know they had three weeks where they weren't fantastic, but they're in winning positions in all of those games. And I heard Brayshaw speak after the game, and he was talking about each contest and playing your role. And I think that's what Melbourne did last night. They hunted Brisbane. Like, I haven't seen a team hunt another team for a long time, and their contested possessions, I think they were plus 38 or something like that. It was ridiculous. And most of that was in the first half when the game needed to be shown how to be playing. I think it was plus 32 or something in the first half. The clearances, they won by 11, but they lost the hitouts by 11. So that they'll just, where we often talk about, you can get carried away with stats, but the stats that you don't get carried away with is the contested football and the clearances. And Melbourne just absolutely annihilated Brisbane there. And their pressure, particularly in the forward half, they played their front half game again. That's what I seen last night. They obliterated Brisbane in so many areas, but I think the pressure that they brought, I mean, Viney, you've got Petrarca and you've got Oliver doing their stuff, and now if you can add Viney doing what he did last night consistently, geez, a tough little bugger. Loved watching him play. And Rama, what I've seen last night a little bit, I know Petrarca does it, he exits the stoppages forward because he's got such a great step and great strength through the core. He breaks tackles. But what I've seen last night of Melbourne, they handled the ball a little bit forward out of stoppages more. And I reckon it was sort of like a little bit of Richmond surge. And I really liked it. I thought they were really good in that part.
I think there was a real emphasis from Melbourne last night to take territory within that game. I think in their losses, they've been flicking the ball around sideways, a bit of backwards. But last night, it was evident to me that, like you said, if the ball was on it, just surge it. Just get the meters. Get it into our forward half. Get it into our forward half, then we'll worry about it from there. So, we listened to Chris Fagan's comments earlier. They were bashed up last night, Brisbane. They were really bashed up.
So, to both of you who have lived it, and have been involved in really good teams, and both of you have been involved in really bad teams as well. I'm interested in this whole thing of psychological damage. They play each other again in the home and away season. I think it's round 23 up at the Gabba. This was a heavyweight battle where one team got absolutely belted. Does it have psychological damage ramifications for Brisbane, or is it exactly what they need, that it's happened early enough that Chris Fagan can use that now as a reference point of what they need to do to now be back in that conversation as a premiership contender?
It's a really good question, Whitey, because there's yes and no to that for me. We've seen the stat that Brisbane haven't won at the MCG since 2014. Now, I don't know how many games that actually is. Cause
it's about 8 or 9.
Is it? So it's not, you think 2014, that's 8 years, but it's only one game a year type of thing. But it's still, that would be in the back of their mind a little bit. The next game they play is at the Gabba, where they play a different brand. Now, they had two players out last night that are super important to Brisbane, in Zorko and Bailey. Now, I know Gorn was out for Melbourne, who's important, but for me, them two boys there, they are huge to the way that Brisbane actually play their style of football. Bailey is a star, and Zorko just racks him up off half-back. So I like the fact for Brisbane, if I'm in Brisbane's shoes, that it's happened now. You can really dissect that game and go, rightio, how do we need to change this to be better? Because it was 1v2, and the gap is absolutely huge. So you'd hate for that to happen in a final and have to wait 6 months to rectify that. It's happened now, and they get the opportunity to do it in 8 weeks.
If you're a challenger, which Brisbane are, you want to test yourself against the best. And, yeah, I do think last night's game will have some psychological damage towards Brisbane. Now, if that was 2 weeks before a final series, I'd be really, really concerned. But because they've got the round two bout in round 22 or round 23, whenever that is, Boomer's spot on. It gives them a chance to dissect it. But I think a lot of last night's game, take away the first quarter, Brisbane won't want to watch.
Well, you mentioned earlier, McStay, Hipgood and Danaher. Does it work? I mean, they have to play it in a way because they're all there, all fit. Or do they need to be more flexible?
Brisbane have got some flexibility. I can remember round two, they had Bailey, Cameron and McCarthy had 18 shots on goal against us. Right. Now, last night they had two. McCarthy kicked one goal, one, and Cameron didn't hit the scoreboard, and no Bailey, of course. So they are flexible in the way they go about it. I don't know if three forwards work, and I don't know if two forwards work, and I don't know if one forward works. But I think they're flexible enough to change their team around to match who they're playing. Now, Yeah, did that work last night? Three tools v Melbourne. Lever still had, and Lever should be buying May dinner every single night because he's a much better player when May's playing. I think he had 15.
Eight intercept marks
and 15.
You don't want to go to dinner with Stephen May.
That's twice we've heard of that, isn't
it? But the main contenders, like Geelong, have gone the big two. Melbourne's got big two. Yeah,
two seems to be the number.
Richmond, successful, big two. Carlton. I think Carlton, big two. Surrounded by littles. Three talls run. Yeah, I don't know. You raised that, Waddy, didn't you? You saw that a long way out. Does this work?
Yeah, I don't think Brisbane's forward line's the problem. I personally think it's their midfield. I don't think it runs deep enough. And
one midfielder short.
Yeah, and then last night when you lose Lyons in the second quarter, you haven't got Bailey, you haven't got Zorko. So Lyons
is
obviously...
Jared Berry the player we thought he was going to be?
Maybe not, but I think the thing with Brisbane is they're a bit one-paced in the midfield. So what happens is that when Zorko and Bailey don't play, they are the line breakers. And you notice that whenever Brisbane are a bit stodgy in the midfield, the first thing that Fagan does is he'll chuck Rayner or he'll chuck Bailey or he'll chuck Zorko into that midfield mix to create run and carry, and none of them are there.
And at the Gabba, Waddy, it's a fast brand of football. Yeah. It's hot up there. The deck's hard. So that style, and that's what I was saying before, that style, those two players are super important to the way Brisbane play. So that's something that Fagan will have in his back pocket, saying, rightio, got to remember, the grand final's not going to be played at the Gabba this year.
Yeah, see, McCluggage is a ball carrier, but he's not a zippy ball carrier, if that makes any sense.
Yeah,
Bailey and Zorko and Rayner are the... Now, Rayner was there, obviously, last night, but played a fair bit forward, but they're not zippy like... Sorry, McCluggage isn't zippy like those other two are. The quick change of direction, and that's where I feel that they're a bit lacking. And, you know, if you think of Lyons and you think of Neil's probably that a little bit, but they're not really ball carriers like what Bailey and Zorko can bring to that team.
You speak about the depth too, Whitey. Whenever a good team wins, I always end up looking at their mids.
Yep.
Petrarca, Oliver, Viney, top, and Brayshaw, top four possession getters last night. It's the same as if you look at Carlton when they're going well. Walsh, Cripps, Hewitt, Kennedy, they all have high possession. And if that's happening, they're winning enough football and kicking the ball inside 50 enough. I think Brisbane were the number one scoring team in the competition. They got held to 50-odd points.
Yep.
So Melbourne did so much right. They did so much right. And you know what? Last night, they're on. And I don't think any team in the competition last night would have beat Melbourne.
And I think that's the thing is, when Richmond's at their best and when Melbourne's at their best, they just make the opposition look so bad because of how well they're playing. And potentially you can over-analyse the losing team because they just suffocate the life out of them.
The Footy Preview with Boomer Harvey from Greyhound Racing Victoria. Victorian Greyhound Racing has never been so accessible. Every Victorian Greyhound race is live and free with Greyhound Racing Victoria's watchdog app and website.
Victoria's Own Breakfast Club.
5-8, Adam White, Scott Gallen, Adam Rabinaskis and Brent Harvey with you as we look at round 15 of the AFL season. Tonight it's the Bulldogs and the Hawks. This game being played down at Marvel Stadium. A big game for the Dogs, gentlemen. We touched on it with Steve-O and also with Mark Hunter as big Bulldog men. There's a few nervous Bulldog supporters around at the moment about this game.
I'm nervous. I mean... And Cody Waitman selected, whether he plays, I'm not sure about that. I don't, it's just one of those games, Waddy. And, you know, their ins are nice. Gunston didn't get up. Lewis is in, Impey. Hawthorn, and I've been lucky enough to see him a couple of times. When they're on, they play a style, they can score, and they're very impressive. And then when they're a bit off, they're a bottom four team. So... I am nervous, but that's just my Bulldog hat on, which I literally have on.
Rammer?
I think the Bulldogs' midfield should be too good. Should be. So I like the balance of the Bulldogs' forward line now with Ugelhagen in there because it just adds another target.
He did some nice things.
Yeah, look, he may not get a lot of possession or whatever, but it just... There's another then key defender needed to play on him. That doesn't then allow that other key defender to go and be a two-on-one with Aaron Norton. And you see the result last week. Now, everyone will say it was an attacking game last week, blah, blah, blah. But you still got to kick the goals. And Norton was able to do that.
Frosty out actually hurts Hawthorn. Mm.
It does.
We laugh about Frosty, but he would have been an option for Norton. Then who has to play him? Sicily? When you prefer Sicily to play maybe on Jugelhagen
and try to come off a little bit. Yeah, absolutely. The Bulldogs at the minute are absolutely flying. Some of the stats in the last 4 weeks, number one for scoring, number three for inside 50s, number three for transitioning the ball from D50 into 50, and number one clearance team in the competition. That's the last month of football. So they're absolutely flying at the minute. On the other hand, Hawks, number 17 in the contested possession and number 18 in clearances.
Oh, dear.
So if the Bulldogs continue down the road that they've been going the last month, and Hawthorn there, we've got two contrast teams where Bulldogs will win the ball in close, get it forward, score, win the ball back in the back half, score. So we could see, if it's a good day, the Bulldogs transitioning really, really well.
I'm very confident now.
I mean, look, we
debated, that's only last month, Scotty.
We debated Tim English earlier in the program, but the reality is they are a much better team when he's there than when he's not. Now, he's not here tonight, but for me, the Bulldogs, just the weight of possession that they'll get in the midfield.
Yeah, Libba's humming, and when Libba's humming, generally the Bulldogs, you know,
McRae,
are pretty...
McRae, I mean...
Dunkley's playing well.
Bailey Smith not there does hurt them, but there is enough there, you know, Treloar into the mix as well, that it's a much deeper midfield and a much classier midfield than Hawthorn that relies still on a few.
You always come back, Waddy, don't you? And that's twice now you mentioned depth and midfield, yeah. And I'm exactly the same. That's how I sort of look at my football and say, rightio, if things are going badly for the Bulldogs, they've got some options. If things are going not so well for Hawthorn, they haven't got as much option. Yeah. So, you know, Libba, you mentioned Libba, and that's why their clearance numbers are so big, and their contested football is sitting right up the top of the ladder in the last month, because his football has gone to another level in the last month. So those players that you... Because when you think of the Bulldogs, you always say Bontempelli, Smith now, Dale. You don't really think Libba anymore.
No, Libba does his role.
Yeah, he just plays his role, and that's his role, to win contested football, and that's why the Bulldogs have been good in the last month.
And the other part to this is, I think Gardner and Keith are good enough to hold Kaczynski and Lewis.
Yeah, I agree with that.
As well.
I mean, Lewis back in helps all that, but yes, it's a very good point.
So we talk about the importance of this game in the context of the other games. So the other games, there are four top eight games this weekend, but this one has equal importance in my view, because the Dogs win, they go equal on points with teams that are in the eight, regardless of what happens on the weekend. So I'll give you an example, Sydney and St Kilda, the loser of that game would go equal points with the Bulldogs if they were to win. The Doggies are just a game behind Collingwood in ninth, but then if they lose, then all of a sudden they're bringing teams like Port Adelaide and the Suns back into their sort of mix as they try and chase the spot in the bottom part of the eight. So they just can't afford to lose this one, the Dogs.
It's a great round of football, isn't it?
And it is.
Not just these two games tonight, but just the whole weekend, starting last night, it was... Oh, I think there's eight out of the nine are ripper games. Maybe the Kangas in Adelaide that's not going to make the finals. Maybe people look at that one and go...
Essendon West Coast.
Oh, and there's Essendon West Coast. So maybe seven out of the nine, Rama, might be really, really good games. But all have ramifications for the positions of the ladder.
No doubt. All right, tip for tonight. We won't worry about the Essendon West Coast game for the moment, but for the Hawthorn Bulldogs game, tipping?
Yeah, no, I'm more confident now after my friend here has pumped me up.
Bulldogs for me, yes.
Yeah, Dogs.
Yep, Bulldogs for me as well.